This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 457.
It looks like you're recording a podcast.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Today is Friday, and I'm here with my friend and co-host Andy Piper to talk tech, gaming, AR, UX, all kinds of fun stuff. Andy, how the heck are you?
I am good, and you can bet there'll be some Vision Pro in the show as well, because you got one, and I don't, and you just love telling me about it.
But you got really close to one, right?
I did.
I mean, you were within a couple of hundred miles.
I was in the same country as a number of them. I visited the US last weekend. I was there just for a really short trip. I visited the beautiful college town of Princeton, just outside, I guess it's in New Jersey there, across the river from New York City, and it was really pretty. It was awful weather when I landed, but Sunday was gorgeous, and I attended a workshop on the Fediverse and Federated Decentralized cool. Social Networks on Monday, and that was really good. There was a lot of people that I'd not met before that I'd come across online, different online protocols and standards being discussed. So yes, that was a good trip.
And hopefully there's a couple of them listening to our show when this posts on Monday.
Maybe. I didn't unfortunately have time to check out a Vision Pro in the store, which is what you were alluding to. Although I did discover that I hadn't taken the lightning cable that I still need for charging my AirPods with me.
But you're in the UK. I mean, does that mean everything is USB-C?
Not your AirPods Max or your last generation AirPods Pro. Okay. So I had both of those with me and... there you go. So unfortunately, my friend Hannah was able to lend me her lightning cable just to get myself charged and for the flight back. But
nice. Well, I do think we have one correction from last week's show.
What?
And during the discussion about the availability of the Vision Pro in the UK, there was a little confusion between 2 links from now and 2 weeks from now.
Oh.
And I don't think there's a date yet. It was 2 links from when we were discussing it.
I think you're right, actually. Yes. I remember when I listened back, I remember that confusion as well. Oh, well.
We just have tons to talk about, and we're gonna keep it going right away with a VentureBeat link. I figure we'll save the Vision Pro to the end so I can gab and gab on.
makes sense.
About what researchers knew and what they did not know. Andy, I can't remember, did you post this one or did this come from Michael?
I think it may have come from Michael. I certainly read this story this week. I don't remember if I read this from VentureBeat, but the notion here is that a particular one of the AIs, in this case it's Anthropic, which is was founded by one of the former OpenAI engineers. They have an AI chatbot or system they call Claude, as opposed to ChatGPT or Bing Chat or any of the other ones that are floating around, Gemini. From Google. And they claim that Claude is outperforming. I mean, we know this. It's an arms race. Everybody's trying to prove that their latest model and LLM data set is better performing than the last one and the competitors. And one of the things and the notions that came up here was that whilst they were testing it, they were basically trying to evaluate its capabilities. And there's a particular type of evaluation known as a needle in a haystack test, which basically fuzzes the information, gives you a really complicated question where there's lots of information, but there is a cool question in the sentence, but a load of other unrelated information in there. And the model actually turned around and said that this is a kind of a weird question, the way that you phrased it, and I think you might be testing whether or not this is an AI. basically. Did you insert a joke to see if this was being, that I was paying attention? So, yeah, it's curious. Now, it's been followed up on X by somebody saying AGI is near. And
no,
I'm sorry. It's, you know, I'm just so skeptical of that on the basis of the way that we are currently training models and regurgitating information. We are getting better. The models are getting better. The systems are getting better at answering questions, identifying the core of questions and giving relevant information in a quicker, more accurate, more human-like manner. They are not generally intelligent. They may be able to detect that the pattern of a question seems to match a particular pattern that might imply a test is happening. It is not about to start breaking out of its digital chains and go off and start World War III. I just, it really frustrates me.
It frustrates me too. And whenever I hear, you know, our model's better than your model discussions, right? As you say, it's an arms race right now. And everybody's model is constantly getting better. One of the things that I've been working on is, are you familiar with a RAG, specifically retrieval augmented generation?
I don't think so.
So I've been doing work in that space recently, which is basically you provide a corpus of data.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, a bunch of Wikipedia articles. And then you provide a set of questions with answers that say, based off of this corpus of questions, here are a rank list set of answers that you could glean from the corpus that I provided you.
Right.
Okay. And so it's a method or a way of taking a general large language model and providing context for a specific domain or set of data.
Okay.
And the way I look at the arms race right now, and I could be completely wrong, right? So this is just my interpretation of what I'm seeing is, in some of the my model's better than your model discussions, they appear to be somewhat domain specific. I'm not saying Anthropic is, but it seems like in the context of certain contexts, the RAG model is a great way to make my model better than your model.
Right.
Which is the thing that I'm trying to do for a specific domain, right?
Right.
But it's still hard, right? And as you point out, none of them are off coming up with new and novel answers to questions that have not been asked yet.
Right.
Which is creation.
Interesting. Yes. I've been using various similar kind of tools to Claude. I do tend to use Copilot when I'm doing some coding because I use Visual Studio Code and I have access to Copilot on GitHub. So I've been occasionally using that to help me, to point me in the direction of solving problems. I think that Stability AI also announced a new visual model this week as well, if I remember rightly. So I think I may have applied to be on the waiting list for that. I like to try these things. Again, they're tools.
Yeah.
I find them fascinating. I am treating them as tools and for getting things done rather than just creating spammy messages and misinformation. These are things that came up at the Defederated Social Networks Conference event this week. You know, how can we deal with the amounts of potential generated misinformation that gets spread, and humans have this tendency not to think and just to be lazy and to click like and reshare on things without necessarily applying their full thought processes.
Well, I think that is an evolutionary trait that has served us well in the past, right? It's all about efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't have to do the work and I can efficiently do something,
right?
You know, that's why we get fat, right? Because our bodies become efficient at consuming calories.
Right.
But speaking of other annoying and spammy things, there was an article I know you shared, I saw too, about, you know, the good news about Clippy.
The article we've got here is a really fun and interesting one. It is on the Wall Street Journal website, so you may need to use memes to access the full story, depending on your subscription status. But Clippy, of course, was invented back in the 90s, and those of us who were around at that time, I'm sure that some of our listeners by now were not around at that time or don't necessarily remember that. But it was a little animated paper clip that would pop up on your Microsoft Office docs and say, hey, it looks like you're writing a letter, and be there with a little chat type icon offering to help. And people generally found it annoying and kind of clicked to get rid of it as soon as possible.
Didn't Clippy come out of Bob?
It did. Exactly right. Microsoft Bob was their human-centric, human-friendly operating system. So they did indeed. They created a number of these little characters that were an attempt to make the operating system more friendly. There's a few interesting things. So this is a story about the person that invented Clippy and how there's now this sort of renaissance and people having fond memories. I think we spoke about this on the show last year. There's somebody that made a 3D printed animated Clippy model that you can kind of treat as an animated assistant. But a couple of fun...
I've actually played with VS Code and had a Clippy plugin that is back-ended by Copilot.
Right. So that comes up in here as well. Somebody mentions the fact that it's a shame they didn't mention Copilot Clippy, because it would have given it a bit more personality. Apparently, at the time, in the late 90s, Microsoft developers referred to Clippy as TFC, or that... F clown, freaking clown, perhaps. But there's some fun stuff.
Should be
here.
Fracking, right? Because that had been about the time of Battlestar Galactica using frack. This,
you're probably right. I think it is an interesting story, and the fact that they trademarked it to protect it as well just a few years ago. Because, you know, it was, some people were taking it perhaps in directions that were not so preferent, things that Microsoft wouldn't have chosen. But I think the very last here, it mentions that the way that AI is being marketed now is the revenge of Clippy. I think that's absolutely true. You know, we are looking, or companies are looking, to humanize their models and give them, we've talked about this, names and personalities and
personality,
things like that persuade people that they are more than a tool, and they are an assistant, and they are there to help you and have their own personality. Again, it comes back to this debate about age versus AGI, as in the computer itself thinking and doing without you participating or not. So I think it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, and I actually, I was not an immediate Clippy hater, right? And I, you know, given my fond love of Dungeons and Dragons and all things in that vein, I immediately switched Clippy to the Little Wizard.
Right. Yes, right? I remember that. Of course. Right? Yeah.
and it was. We talk about in modern UX, we talk about delightful discovery. And Clippy, in a way, would provide some level of delightful discovery. Now, it also provided a bunch of really annoying, you just hit, you know, Control V. Did you mean to paste? Well, yes, I was doing exactly what you think I was doing, because that's what you do. So there was the annoyance factor. But, you know, like all new tech, I think... I've always enjoyed trying it out. I may shut it off after I get annoyed or if it doesn't provide a value. But I think it's something that you have to experiment with this stuff. And going back and revisiting it this many years later, right? So what, 30 years later almost, it does take on a different viewpoint than just the haters.
I think it absolutely does. But the nostalgia is a fascinating thing. Talking of nostalgia, I think that's a beautiful bridge to our next topic. So we're going to step across from the AI area into the gaming arena that we also love. And
Yes.
One of the things that Mike shared with us this week is that EA has added some classics on Steam. So these games have been available, I think, previously via other channels. I think it's been available on the GOG, Good Old Games service. But they're now available through Steam, which also makes them available on the Steam Deck, for example. And they are, among others, Populous, SimCity 3000, Command & Conquer, and
Dungeon Keeper.
So you obviously are Mr. Dungeon Keeper.
I still have my CDs in my storage area above the garage.
Amazing. I loved Populous. I was a big fan of Populous. Although, you see, this has been interesting to me. I tried playing Populous recently, saying that I think it was on a console emulator rather than the computer version. And it is really blocky and clunky. I mean, compared to what I'm used to now. I can't remember what context that came up in. It must have been on a handheld console type emulation type system, because that's the only context I can think of.
I never played
Alpha Centauri either, even though I loved SimCity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as we talked about back in the fall when Baldur's Gate was coming out, or really taking off, and you had started playing it before it launched. I had gone out and repurchased Baldur's Gate, Baldur's Gate 2, Neverwinter Nights, Tales of the Sword Coast,
yes,
all of those games on Steam, all of them, and I just could not get into them. I tried, and they were blocky, and the UI was troublesome, etc.
Now, you see, talking of, first of all, I just want to say on this particular collection, and let's dust this one down, round this one down. These games, the nine or so games, I think they've re-released. They're still charging for them, rather than just making them available for free. They are not that expensive. They are only a few dollars or pounds. I have to say that I did look at this list and think, oh, I love Populous. Oh, I love SimCity 3000. I'm not going to pay a couple of quid for them because I've got enough games already that I'm not getting free. What I will say is that on the subject of retro / classic games, I think we may have spoken about this a couple of weeks ago. I have downloaded Star Wars Dark Forces, the remaster, yes, on my Steam Deck. Very good. Yeah. I mean, it is very close to the original look and feel. The things that have been redone are the cutscenes. So they've been done in this kind of redone animation style. But it looks still good and better than it would have done if it had been the original cutscenes. The actual gameplay is very similar. Which is essentially the Star Wars version of classic Doom, which I loved.
Yes.
So definitely.
You got no problem there.
But
you run
again,
it on your toothbrush.
I posted a picture on Mastodon of the game loading on my Steam Deck, and someone asked what I thought of it. And I have to say, having just complained about the few pounds for, you know, SimCity 3000, this was, I think, 25 or something pounds. And
wow,
that's a lot more to spend on an old game.
That's because Disney owns the IP.
Well, now, possibly, but you know, I was thinking about this, and there's been a story recently that we haven't covered on the show, but Nintendo's had a couple of emulators taken down, and specifically their Switch. It's a Switch emulator and an associated 3DS simulator, which shared some code. And on the one hand, I kind of think, well, the people building those emulators were, you know, sailing a bit close to, well, on top of current generation, right? So arguably eating into real Nintendo sales. The chilling effect is whether that empowers or emboldens Nintendo to go after all emulation of their systems. And they have historically been very litigious.
Yes.
Because games like, you know, the original NES Mario games, Nintendo have brought out the classic little re-release of the NES, and that was fun. But, you know, it's easier to get those things and much more fun to get those things as emulators these days. The legality of the game code is another question we've talked about in the past. I think there's a lot to be said for the way that ID Software, for example, and have done legacy with Doom, for example, where they released the source code after a certain number of years. Yeah. Not necessarily all the games and graphics files, but I think that that is a much more scalable, sensible approach for historical video game preservation than keeping all the IP. Having said that, Nintendo's IP is very clearly tied up with their games and their hardware and everything altogether. So it's an interesting situation.
And they continue to extend the same storyline.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So the ID team has done other things, even though, I mean, Doom has gone to Doom 2, Doom 3, blah, 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 blah. Right. But also, the other thing about Doom when it first came out is it had the level editor. So it actually encouraged people to build on top of it.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, Mario Maker does the same thing, mindset. But that's also a different, it's just a different way of operating, as we mentioned. Having said that, let's bring ourselves up to date with games and cross over into the world of movies as well. Yes. What do you think of the look of this new survival game in for Dune? So this is called Dune Awakening. It's set on Arrakis, and it is an RPG survival type 3D game, I guess. It's coming out later this year.
So this, I want to like it.
Okay.
Right. I like the universe of Dune. Right. I've read the entire series, including, you know, I'm looking on my bookshelf, like some of the books that his son wrote after Frank Herbert died that extended the storyline. Mm-hmm. And I worry that it'll follow the same fate of Lord of the Rings Online.
Right.
Where it starts off, and that was gorgeous, right? It was so many levels above World of Warcraft when it came to an online game. But the story, they either went so outside of the canon of the universe and into the grind mechanics.
Right.
That it wasn't enjoyable. And, you know, just first-person shooter world games are not something I enjoy either. So I want to like it, but I worry that it just won't be my jam.
There is a...
For many reasons.
There's another recent-ish Dune game called Spice Wars, which I played a little bit because it was available on Game Pass Ultimate. So I was... I think I was playing it on cloud streaming, maybe? I can't remember now whether I was doing that or not.
Okay.
But
that came out last year.
It did, yes. Or two years ago.
Released fully last year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's quite good. I mean, it's very reminiscent of Dune 2, which is the big RTS real-time strategy that I really enjoyed in the early 90s on my older systems when I was a student. So yeah, I mean it really reminded me of that one. Okay.
So who knows? We'll see.
Okay, fair enough. I don't think I'm going to bother with the Dune Awakening. There's no release date yet, but I've got lots of other stuff on my backlog, so we'll see. Buttons.
Buttons.
Let's talk about buttons.
Yes. Are you not the cloth covered kind, or the ones with the little four holes in the center, or
physical control buttons, not clothing buttons?
Oh, those types of buttons.
Yeah.
Not keyboard buttons.
No.
Well, you know, one of the discussions my wife and I have been having for some time now as we look to replace our cars,
right,
which have gone very long in the tooth. And, you know, I was looking last year about this time at replacing, and I still haven't.
I know. We've certainly had this conversation over a period of time. Yeah.
is the industry trend to put everything in software and the removal of physical buttons in vehicles. And one of the cars that I looked at, which is a very modern, very current EV, they actually have physical buttons for all the controls.
Well, so this is a story from, it's on Ars Technica this week, in March 2024, as we record. And it's referring to 2026, so a couple of years' time. In the Euro NCAP tests, which is the European New Car Assessment Program, so the European organization that tests new vehicles, and they are apparently going to prioritize awarding points, awarding usability kind of and high values to physical buttons from 2026. Yeah. So they are...
You don't have to take your eyes off the road to control
them. Well, it's that. And the fact that touchscreens generally, you know, there are less affordances for, yeah, exactly what you're what you're doing. And where you have polymorphic user interfaces and, you know, literally things can change on the screen and so a button can be in a different place between different bits of the interface, that can be confusing and problematic and difficult to... keep control of. I think this is interesting. I also would point out that this story points out that Ferrari isn't in Euro NCAP's database. For example, they have turn signals on the steering wheel. But they probably don't care so much about what score they might get in Euro NCAP. It's not a government regulation, so this is not the same as the EU passing regulations around AI or privacy or personal data or other things and being going viral and having a worldwide effect. However, car manufacturers, broadly speaking, come from outside of the EU. There are some European ones. Therefore, this is an organization that will have some impact on how cars are perceived, reviewed, and sold in the region. So it's very similar for those of you listeners in the US. It's similar to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety's program in the US where they have a top safety pick. That's the kind of scoring you're getting. One thing I didn't know from the article as well is that Tesla have actually removed physical stalks around the steering wheel and have moved everything into haptic buttons, which I think would probably annoy me a little bit, but I wouldn't buy a Tesla for lots of other reasons. There you go.
Same here. Yeah, and I did years ago. I test drove one, and it annoyed me.
Well, so
the noise it made on its regenerative braking annoyed.
Well, look, we're about to move on from the cars topic to another topic related to user interfaces and lack of physical affordances. But before we do that, I just wanted to point out though that, as I think about the things I build with gadgets and artwork and things, I have to say that I am becoming more and more aware of tangible, physical, real world stuff. And I have to say that I like to have, you know, whether or not it's just a single button or knob or something for adjusting things around my desk area, I do love to have something physical. So it's interesting. But let's talk about something that doesn't have almost has no buttons, except for a digital crown.
Yes.
So there were a couple of couple of things that I shared this week that I found that point through your way because I don't have one to test, the Vision Pro to test.
Well, the first one is the Magic Room app on the Vision Pro, which seems really cool. Right. And so basically what this app does is it will build a 3D mesh of the space you're in and then you can do stuff. The one post that you sent my way really shows a real time rendering of the Matrix using this app, which is really cool.
I will point out that before we started recording, Michael put on his Vision Pro and said, "All right, okay, I'm going to try this out." And then I said, "It's $12.99," and he said, "Oh, okay, I'm not trying that out."
And I said, "I'm not going to try that out." that was the exact point I was about to get to. It's like it's a neat idea, but so far it has for me no practical purpose. Now that doesn't mean I didn't already spend like $10 on an app that basically puts a video on a prim from back in our Second Life days, right? So what I do is I download some videos that I have, right? Because it won't stream protected content in that app.
Right.
But I have movies that I've ripped myself and put onto my NAS, et cetera, that I've put on there. And it's great to have like an old beaten up crappy black and white TV from the early 70s with the rabbit ears on it playing concert videos while I'm working. And I'll put it, you know, off to the side so I can just have some background music.
And of course, I sent you some spatial videos this week because from my visit to
which
the...
I really enjoyed.
From my visit to the Lego store in Battersea Power Station in London. So it's a nice space. It's a very expansive, as you can imagine from if you remember the picture of Battersea Power Station from the Who album. No, not the Who album. The Pink Floyd album. My goodness, I'm conflating two very different bands just then.
Oh, very different bands. it's funny. It reminded me of one of the shopping malls in Prague.
Okay,
that I've been at. Now theirs is a very new modern building.
Uh-huh.
But just the overall structure and the airiness and the openness of the space. And it's not the case of malls that are near me.
Right.
They're like one or two stories tall. Yeah, they have big open areas.
I mean, the story of Battersea Power Station is...
a show about malls.
No, the story of Battersea Power Station's conversion and eventual availability for public use is a very, very long one. So let's not go into it right now. But it's a nice...
The more interesting link that you shared to me was the ray tracing in Vision Pro.
Right. So these are both actually things that I found on Threads.
Yeah.
Which I will also just really quickly mention, switched on limited Federation support this week. So a few Threads users are now have the setting to make themselves visible in the Fediverse and have people follow and reply, including my friend Evan, who is one of the authors of the Activity Pub spec, and a couple of others. So
I'll have to see if I can subscribe to the posters of these in my Mastodon account.
Yeah, I don't think these particular users will be in that test group, but it's possible. I think that's, again, the Digital Markets Act came in Europe this week, and I predicted that that would have a significant impact on the way that a lot of the interoperability between a lot of the walled garden systems. But yes, the Dream, the user that posted this particular ray tracing video is Dream Weber, Weiber,
yes,
on Threads. And I had a look at their Threads account, and they are doing some really cool stuff with the Vision Pro. They've got people painting moon buggies in three-dimensional space and dropping them on the moon inside the Vision Pro using a combination of Stability AI and Sagebrush and Reality Converter and various other things, including this real-time stereoscopic ray tracer. So that's looking amazing.
The reason I found this article this post so interesting is, and we've talked about this, I think it's been a while, but my reference point on computing power.
Right, is ray tracing.
Is ray tracing, right? And going all the way back to my undergraduate years in college where they had a Cyber 205 supercomputer.
Whoa.
And it was 24 hours of processing to generate a single ray traced image, all the way down to the work when you and I were working directly together back in 2006, 2007, 2008, where they were doing 60 frames a second ray tracing, right? And that was... What it was, networked PS2s, I think, or was it PS3s? But anyway, it doesn't really matter. This is stereoscopic ray tracing in a headset.
You've just introduced me to the concept of the Cyber 205, which I'm now looking up. That's my rabbit hole. I totally get where you're coming from. I remember ray tracing.
It was a huge room in our data center on campus where this beast was.
I remember the ray tracing use cases or examples and you know, yes, the ability to actually come up with these amazing images in the early 90s, which took ages. I also, my kind of touchstone for all of this stuff is a Mandelbrot set.
Yeah.
Because that always used to take a long time to generate as well. But
the one quick thing before, because I know we're running out of time, is... When I did my MBA, my strategy instructor was the CEO of Cyber.
Wow.
At the time of the 205.
Very cool. Very cool.
So this was years later, and I was like, dude, you're my hero.
I can imagine. Well, we have just been going through our respective calendars for the coming months, and it looks like there's going to be quite a few points at which the three of us as co-hosts may not all be available, but hopefully we'll continue to keep things trucking along. And Michael, where should people go to check for new episodes and leave us comments? Basically, follow the show notes.
The best thing you can do is go to our website, which surprisingly matches our name.
Wow.
gamesatwork.biz.
That's gamesatwork.biz. HTTPS /// gamesatwork.biz. And that will bring you to our beautiful website. You get all the show notes. You get all of our entire calendar full of
back catalog.
And let us know what you think.
I think there's even some old episodes of Dog Ear Nation hidden away on that site somewhere.
So if you can find those.
You can get to all our socials.
Yeah. Yeah. Find us on Mastodon, Bots in Space. Yep. And let us know what you think. And with that,
we'd love to hear from you.
We are all done. So see ya.
Bye. You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.